Cozy traditions feel good, especially this time of year. And that includes changing up your makeup look for fall. From lashes for days with the viral Liquid Lash Extension Mascara to enhancing a smoky eye with your favorite shade of Brilliant Eye Brightener. Thrive Cosmetics is your go-to for completing every fall look. Whether you want a simple just gotta get out the door routine or fall glam that wows from the office to all your favorite fall festivities, you'll always look and feel radiant with Thrive Cosmetics. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients. And for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help communities thrive. So every time you use your favorite Thrive Cosmetics product, you're helping communities you care about, too. Complete your fall look. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/cozy for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/cozy.
This is Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
Okay, so if my math is correct, 8 teams started round 2, 6 teams remain, 2 are out, 2 are into one conference final, the other 4 battling for the 2 spots in the other conference final. Vic, do I have that correct?
That sounds right to me. Are we allowed to say we're sad? I think we're allowed to say we're a bit sad. We live in Toronto, we're a bit sad.
Yeah.
We're gonna look at the game objectively, absolutely, because we can do that. We're both journalists and we understand how to do that. But I still think we can say we're a little bit sad, sad for the city of Toronto, sad for Blue and White Nation, sad for Maple Leafs fandom, sad for ourselves, because it was fun. It was fun watching them play some playoff hockey.
It feels better now to say it out loud. You feel better. Okay, so now we're going to start. Actually, we got that off, at least off her chest. We're talking about Toronto. They, of course, fell to the Panthers in that 5th game. So we'll dive into that. Pucks and Seven, Ryan Payton, Victoria Matiash. Follow us on Twitter at Ryan M. Payton, also at Victoria Matiash. Vic does great work, as always, with a major news talk channel in Toronto and ESPN.com. And I do work for SiriusXM, NHL Network Radio, Channel 91. The Kraken as well. They're still in this thing, Vic. Every time we do this, I keep saying they're still in this. I hosted a show this morning, The Hot Stove, in the morning on Channel 91 on SiriusXM. So we kind of dove into a bunch of stuff there. We're going to do it again now. Coming up in the next segment, we'll talk about Edmonton and Vegas. We'll talk about Dallas and Seattle. And then we'll dive into the Hart Trophy. But let's get going, why not, with Toronto and Florida. So the Leafs won Game 4. Sent it back home for Game 5. There was so much involved in that game. Victoria,
involved. It wasn't lacking for drama. That's
goodness. I mean, we can spend the whole hour talking about that. So many things inside the game that happened. But at the end of it all, as you said, kind of a sad day. It is tough. If you're a Leaf fan and you watch this core, you watch this group, you see this window that's being open, but it's getting closer, like closing in as every year passes by. And the Panthers move on to the Eastern Conference Final, very surprisingly, I think.
I think less surprisingly game by game, but definitely surprisingly when you think about where they were in January.
At the beginning of the playoffs.
Even into February, they weren't even supposed to be here. I mean, if Toronto was advancing past the Lightning, they were supposed to play the Bruins. That's how it was all drawn up. But none of that happened, obviously. Full credit to the Panthers in this game. They got the early lead. I think that was a big key for them. Toronto fought back valiantly. Yep. We'll get to the non-goal call in a minute because that deserves its own attention. But you know what? Credit to William Nylander for actually, you know, tying it up with 4 and a bit left. We have been criticizing the core 4 with this team for the last couple of weeks. Justified, but we still have been criticizing. And he did step up and he actually did put in an incredible individual effort to score that goal. And then in overtime, anything can happen. What I did like about overtime, or what I appreciated about overtime, was the Leafs didn't lose it on the Florida power play. That was because of the delay of game of that weird tap of the puck going over the glass, because that was how you did not want to. I know you hate that rule. I think they need to look at it, because there was no delay of game with that particular play.
If it's purely accidental, like that was, there is absolutely no intent by TJ Brody to try to alleviate pressure by putting the puck in the crowd. So yeah, they do. It just, we've seen time and time again, players do that, try to alleviate, but 9 times out of 10, Vic, they don't mean to do it. I think it's a really stupid rule. And yeah, it just really irks me.
I would if there was the gray area that the ref could determine if there was intent. And I know that's very difficult to gauge sometimes, right. But I think you can still tell, like in this particular case. Anyway, that's worth a segment on its own. And sometime we're going to give it its proper due.
Yeah.
But right now I'm glad the fact the game was not decided on that call, because it wasn't. The Leafs killed off that penalty. And then shortly after that, there was okay. So here's my issue with the game-winning goal.
Go.
I am not one to spout off that the Leafs have it in. The refs have it in for the Leafs. The league doesn't want the Leafs to advance. That's all horse manure. It's all horse manure, right. And we know it. I think the NHL would be perfectly fine with the Maple Leafs advancing and all the rest. They really didn't call a lot in that game. And I was watching it last night, but you're caught up in the emotion. It was watching again today, certain highlights over and over and over again, that I noticed how many calls were not made. And you hear the argument on social media, oh, but you know, Florida didn't get some calls. No. The Maple Leafs really didn't get the calls. And that last one where you can see Radko Gudas holding the stick of Kelly Yarncroc, and he's holding it. And if he doesn't hold it, I'm going to tell you what, that goal doesn't go in. Now, ifs and buts, whatever. Okay. But still, it would have been nice if that wasn't the case. And I'm still a little surprised that the Maple Leafs just got off the ice and just conceded it. And there wasn't any discussion about it. I know it's not reviewable, but still, if Yarncroc had made a big deal about it in the moment, maybe you get that whistle.
Right.
So that's a great point. I just didn't love the way it wrapped up. That's all.
Yeah, no. And we'll get also to the non-goal as well in just a second. But to your point about that last rush by the Panthers, when the Leafs were in the offensive zone and Gudas got the puck and he started up ice and he gave it to Cousins. And then you could see the only thing Gudas had in his mind was go to the front of the net. And he was going to clear out anybody and anything in his way. I didn't see the holding of the stick until the replay and the replay and a replay. I also will tell you this. Yeah, I don't like, I'm all for competitiveness in hockey. Totally get it. I really did not like what Gudas did right after that goal. There's that still frame shot. I know we're picking this apart, but still, I mean, be sportsmanlike. And he just yelled in the face of Joseph Woll, who look, came in and did as good of a job as I think anybody would have expected. I don't blame the guy for anything whatsoever. But anyway, the whole thing was Gudas was going back and I'm like, okay, it's done. It is. And to your point, if that stick was available for Yarncroc, he would have probably tried to poke it away. The lane would not have been as open as it would have been for Cousins because of what Gudas did. That's too bad. Let's go back now. I want your thoughts on the non-goal, the Riley cut-in that took about, 10 minutes or so to look at again and again and again and again. So what did you make of that?
I don't understand why we don't have the technology to sync up the video with the audio and understand perfectly when the whistle went. I just don't understand why we don't have that. And I am being a little bit critical of the league, or maybe I just don't understand engineering and science well enough to understand that that's something very difficult to do, because I don't get it. I don't get how you couldn't have figured out quicker whether it was or wasn't. Now, to my mind, I changed my mind continuously during that review as well with what was available to watch and to listen to. And I thought, no, you know what? Right. They can't call that a goal because you couldn't see it. And that was for the longest time. Bobrovsky's pad was right on top of it. And then at the end, when you saw it cross the line, okay, but maybe the whistle had went, but they had called goals before, because there's the whole, well, the whistle didn't affect the flow of play. It's just, there's too much gray here for me. And there's too much wiggle room here. And I hate the fact that this was, and it was a deciding factor. And I know they went on, both teams went on to score more, one more goal each, really. But I hated the fact that this was in an elimination game. It's not the same thing as playing in November. I don't care what anybody says. It isn't. I just didn't like that it was a factor. I thought it was a goal. Really, if pushed, I'm going to say it was a goal. I can understand the argument it not being one, again, with the whistle blowing. But I really wish they would come up with a different way to figure this out.
It is. I completely agree. And a lot of times when the rules and things happen and they get implemented in sports, new ones, you hate to see them happen because of something like this. This should be, have been in place in the NHL for a long time. And I know there was a lot at stake to do it. I totally understand that. Aaron Ward, we had him on, former Stanley Cup champion. He actually, in part, is involved in a company that helps with this whole tracer thing in a puck and puts like these signals on the ice. He said it's really hard to do. So the process is starting, okay. But unfortunately, this was a huge factor in this game. What I didn't, well, I'm not going to say I didn't like how I thought at the end of it all it was in, but the one thing that I didn't really realize till today was that if the goal was overturned and if it was deemed a good goal, Paul Maurice could have challenged, and he would have challenged it by saying, well, Bobrovsky had the puck, Morgan Riley pushed the pad over, right? So then that could have come back either way. So I think Florida was in benefit, and they would have won that thing regardless. But again, as we're talking about, it's the game within the game, and it's really too bad a bunch of those things happened last night.
Well, I mean, I guess it's entertaining. So before we get too wrapped yeah, up with our...
That's one word.
With our, yeah. We're sounding... It sounds like we've got a lot of sour grapes here, and I want to pull back on that a little bit. The Florida Panthers did a hell of a job.
Yes.
Okay? And
yes.
They did beat the Maple Leafs. They did. Yep. Were they the better team last night? And we're talking about Friday night's elimination game, depending on when you're listening. I don't think so. I don't think they were the better team last night, but they won that game. Were they the better team more consistently throughout the series? I think there's an argument to be made for that, for certain. And they knew how to play the Leafs, and they knew how to neutralize the Leafs' best players because they did it the entire time. They can't keep up with this team, but they did. Carter Verhaeghe flies. Everybody else doesn't. I mean, but they did everything that they needed to do. They played aggressive. They played physical. Their forecheck was incredible. They clogged up the slot in front of Bobrovsky, who was out of his mind. Full credit there.
Yep.
I was continually expecting Bobrovsky to fold, to just fold like
to break.
A cheap house of cards and crumple. And he didn't. And what? How many saves did he have? 50 of 52 in that game, I believe.
Over 50. Yeah.
They weren't all amazing shots. They weren't. In fact, the quality chances, I believe, were quite low. And that's credit again to Florida's defense. But again, he stopped 50 pucks in that game. So does Florida deserve to be where they are? I believe they do. I'm just going to nitpick a couple things in that game. Again, with the officiating, I think they could have called a few more, even some on the Panthers side as well. I think they could have called, especially watching the next game. When we're going to get to in the second segment, when the Oilers played Vegas and they did call a bunch of stuff.
Yep.
And I'm like, that wasn't called in the earlier game. That wasn't called in the early game. Ooh, look at that.
Yeah.
Not called in the earlier game. Right.
No.
So it's
tough. Yeah. It's tough to be consistent. I'm glad you said too, we're not just, you know, sore losers and all that stuff. But the unfortunate part for me is that there was so much of that discussion after a game like that. I wish there was none of that and just a good hard-fought game, no controversial issues, and the Panthers ended up winning. To your point, yes, the Panthers certainly knew how to play Toronto. They were physical. They knew how to play Boston. They came back against Boston. There's something to this team. They have no pressure. They don't care, yet they do. Bobrovsky's numbers, Vic, against Toronto, 4-1 in the series, 1.89 goals against, .943 save percentage, which is absolutely outstanding. Yeah. And here, and last thing. Yeah. Last thing on this. This is a kind of a weird thing. Back on March 29th, the Panthers beat Toronto 3-2 in overtime. They ended a 4-game skid. That started for them a run that they went on in the last 8 games, 6-1-1. And they finished 1 point ahead of Pittsburgh and 1 point ahead, or also
wild.
Ahead of the Buffalo Sabres. So
that's
just weird. Weird, eh?
Yeah. So yeah, what do the Leafs do now?
Anyway, okay, Panthers move on.
Leafs are on the golf course.
Yeah.
What do they do now? Who's gone? Who stays? What happens?
Yeah, so here's my thing. My thing is that the window again with this team is closing. Marner, Matthews, Tavares, Nylander, all the big, they have either 2 or 1 year left on the contract. I think the biggest thing is going to be whether Matthews signs an extension in the summer. He's able to. If he does not, I think the writing is on the wall. I think that he will not re-sign and he will test free agency. I don't think the team is that bad. They're not that bad. I think Wall's good. The future is too. I think what's going to happen is this. If Dubas gets fired, look, he did everything he could, Vic, to try to get the best team on the ice. And I applaud him. And I think he did very well with his acquisitions. At the end of the day, it's up to the guys on the ice. I do think they need a fresh set of eyes, a fresh voice behind the bench. So I think the first move is going to be Sheldon Keefe. Don't like it. Hate when coaches get fired, but I think that's the first move.
I think so too. They do have some decisions to make in the summertime. I really, really hope that they're able to re-sign Ryan O'Reilly. I do think he's a difference maker. I still think he has a lot of steam left. It's going to depend on his price tag for sure. All the criticism that the core four received, first of all, I mean, like, what are you going to do? You're not moving John Tavares's contract. So that conversation is done. You're not trading Mitch Marner because he's a magical player and he's amazing and he's incredible. And who are you going to replace Mitch Marner with? Okay. William Nylander was probably the best of the four in this series, so you don't want to necessarily move him because now he's proven he is a playoff performer. That leaves Austin Matthews. If you're moving Austin Matthews, if he doesn't sign an extension, and that's going to be a very – Toronto's going to talk about this all summer. If he doesn't and he gives an indication that he wants to play in the States, he wants to play in a different market, I don't know how much he likes it here. If he's giving that indication and he is moved, you better get something back because Austin Matthews – is an exceptional player as well. And those type of centermen do not grow on trees. You just can't go when they're talking about Mark Scheifele in Winnipeg. Oh, you got to move Mark Scheifele out of Winnipeg. Well, who do you place Mark Scheifele with? They're not readily available. Right. So you have to make sure. Yeah. But Matthew Nyes is going to play next season and he's going to play for cheap because he's on an entry-level deal. That's a huge bonus for the for the Leafs. Re-sign Sam Lafferty. I really like that kid. I know he's not a kid, but he can fly. And you're basically leaving the defensive core outside of you-know-who, who had a rough postseason. You're leaving them essentially alone for another season as well. I think the goaltending is in good shape with Sansa. You're now looking at, never mind Matt Murray, if you can move him and his contract, that's great. I don't think they can, but hopefully maybe they can put him on LTIR for the entire season if he does have a bad neck or a bad head or something, because you're not trading him. So, but you've got Samsonov and you've got Wall in net now, and they're both proven to be good goaltenders with a future and upside. I don't think they're in that bad shape at all. If they don't re-sign Kyle Dubas and he signs with another team, and he has every right to do that as well, you know he's going to just make magic there. And he's going to enjoy a whole hell of a lot of success with whoever, whether it's Pittsburgh or whether it's somewhere else. So I would rather have that brain in-house instead of sending him elsewhere to a team that knows how to beat us. I'd just rather keep him. And you're absolutely right, Ryan. They need a fresh voice behind the bench. I like Sheldon Keefe, but it's not working. They are not, I've heard over and over and over again, many different outlets that he was out-coached in this series by Paul Maurice. So if he was out-coached in the second round playoff series at Stanley Cup Finals, then he can't stay because how do you know he's not going to be out-coached next time?
Yeah, and listen, I'll go one step further by going one step back. Even though Toronto beat Tampa, I think he was out-coached in that series by John Cooper. The reason why the Leafs won that, they got lucky. Three overtime wins on the road, that does not happen a lot. Anyway, it's going to be an interesting offseason in Toronto. Once again, it starts far too early than a lot of the Leaf fans certainly would want. Okay, speaking of off seasons, the Devils are out. Carolina, my goodness, this team is just flying. Five games took them to knock off the Devils. They're into the conference final, Vic, in the East. They're going to take on the Florida Panthers. I'm looking forward to that. Let's go back to that series, Carolina and New Jersey. Give the Devils a ton of credit. An amazing comeback from last year. They were terrible, and the upside is incredible with this club. No reason to hang the heads whatsoever. But at the end of the day, the Carolina Hurricanes, they're the best team right now. Best team in the NHL by far, I think.
If you believe that defense wins in the postseason, I think they're proving it, right? Because they have one of the best defensive cores in the league, if not the best.
Yeah.
So, and they figured out. They figured out how to slow down the Devils, because one of the fastest teams, and particularly through the neutral zone. They figured that out. And that's why they won. And they're not very flashy, and they don't have the scoring prowess that they did even a little earlier. I mean, people are talking about Teravainen. Teravainen had a not great season. They're not missing him huge, and fortunately, it sounds like they're going to get him back. But they are missing Andrei Svechnikov. And they've managed, just all stuck. Everybody does the same thing all of the time. They're incredibly consistent. They've bought into Rod Brind'Amour's system. You want to talk about not being out-coached. Brind'Amour has absolutely figured out how to make it work. And again, being extremely blessed with one of the best defensive cores. And these guys are highly unappreciated. I don't think we talk about them enough. I know you and I don't. We should give them more due. And good enough goaltending. Yep. There you go. It's 1 + 2 + 3 = 6. It's done. That's what you need. They did just enough, but they're all in doing the same thing and they're consistent. And the effort everybody puts in, you can just tell. What we were criticizing about the Leafs earlier, about not taking that extra step, not taking the extra stride, not completing that check, Carolina's players do that to a man. And I think that's a big reason that they're moving on as well.
No Max Pacioretty, no Svechnikov, no Teravainen. Three huge pieces to that puzzle. Rod Brind'Amour, every year, I think he deserves a Coach of the Year nomination, even though he's, you know what I mean? It just, it's incredible what he does and what he's able to do with that team, how they buy into his system. You mentioned the goaltending, and this is intriguing going forward, because Brind'Amour has gone back and forth off and on to Ranta and Freddie Anderson. Kochetkov's been in all that stuff. He was pulled, what, 4 goals and 18 shots, the only time in game 3 when he came in. But Freddie Anderson, want to talk about Bobrovsky's numbers? Anderson's 5-0. With a 1.80 goals against, 931 save percentage. So to me, there's no reason for any discussion. If Freddie's healthy, if he's happy, if the team's rolling, there's no discussion. You put him in, Ranta fine, if there's a short leash, whatever it is. But they've got it all, goaltending, defense, and they're scoring too.
I think the blue line deserves a lot of credit for Freddie's numbers, because I think he's been good.
Sure.
I take nothing away from his performance whatsoever. He's been good, but I think the guys out front are helping him a lot in that regard. But you're absolutely right. Why would you? It ain't broke. Why? If there's any discussion at all about bringing Ranta back in, I don't understand. I don't get that at all. Freddie has been absolutely good enough, and this is a guy who has dealt with issues, especially injury-wise, and now he looks fine. He says he feels fine. You have to believe him by the way that he's performing. Yeah. So there's no, I don't understand any reason for making a switch there. And what's interesting is when the West are still battling it out, and we could still be in for another 2-3 days. Of this competition to figure out who's going to the Western Conference Final. Yep. So no matter what, the Panthers and the Hurricanes are going to get a little bit of rest. And I like that, because I want to see both teams. I know they're both brutally banged up, because everybody is banged up. I'm just waiting to hear that Austin Matthews
has been
playing with a broken wrist or something, because you always hear the stories later. But I mean, they're going to feel a little bit better having the 2-3-4 days off and be their best selves under the circumstances. And I think that's going to be a fun series. I really do.
Carolina going to the conference final, first time since 2019. The Panthers in for the first time since 1996. Been a very, very long time. Going to be fun. Can't wait, in fact, for that series. We'll get to the other games in a second, also to the West, and see what's going on in that conference. Ottawa Senators, before we hit the break, Ryan Reynolds. So reportedly, Reynolds and the Remington Group, they pulled out of this huge bidding war. You know, Snoop's involved, The Weeknd, all these different actors and famous people are all involved to try to get the Senators. The bid was expected to go past $1 billion, which is an unbelievable amount of money for a hockey team. But according to reports, Reynolds and the bid is no longer part of that process.
I find it interesting that they're giving the excuse they weren't given exclusive bidding rights, which I don't understand why you would expect that, but okay. But I think it has probably more. There's something else going on here, and I think it very much might have to do with the fact that this team was supposed to be worth $850 million only a short time ago. Now, all of a sudden, because of all the interest that's been generated, it's now over $1 billion. So maybe it has more to do with the actual price tag. Ryan, you just said it's an unbelievable price tag for a hockey team. It's an unbelievable price tag for a hockey team in Ottawa, Canada.
Right.
Like, this isn't the Rangers. We're not talking about the Blackhawks, right?
That's
like,
a good point.
We're talking a smaller market team outside of the U.S., and they're asking, the $1 billion price tag blows my mind. I think it's great. I think it's great for the league. I think it's great for Ottawa. I think it's great for the Senators. I am now absolutely, I'm rooting on the Snoop Dogg bid for sure. And we'll see if Ryan Reynolds maybe latches onto somebody else. I wonder if he's done with it, or it's just maybe that group didn't have it all together and weren't on all the same page.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. I think there's something a bit more.
We're going to find out.
We shall see. But I'm with you. Ottawa, $1 billion, with all due respect to the Sens, you're right. You're not the Rangers. You're not these high-valued franchises. Anyway, money talks. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll focus in on Edmonton, Vegas, Dallas, and Seattle. Big Game 6 coming up tonight, and we'll take a look at the Hart Trophy finalists as well. Pucks and Seven, Ryan Payne, Victoria Matiash, we will be back.
Welcome back to Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
He is Ryan Payton, and I am Victoria Matiash. playoff edition with plenty of drama. We just went through the Eastern Conference and who's remaining, and we're down to two now. Florida is obviously playing Carolina after the Leafs were eliminated last night. Jersey was eliminated a couple of nights ago, and there's plenty of drama in the West as well. There was another banger last night, followed the Leafs game,
yep,
with Vegas and Edmonton. Dramatic for different reasons. Vegas emerged on top, a tight game. Well, I guess you could say, was it? I suppose. I mean, one team scored almost all the goals in a minute and a half. So that was interesting.
Yes.
But basically, special teams came to play. We have been on this, Ryan, all season with the Oilers, but all postseason, especially with the Oilers, but other teams as well. You cannot give the Edmonton Oilers power plays. You cannot. No. They will burn you. And they only scored three in that game, but all three were with the extra skater. That's not a coincidence. Now, kudos to Vegas for stopping them 5-on-5. That's huge. But just again, illustrating, and the fact that Vegas won was also the fact that Edmonton took bad penalties as well. So when those two teams allow the other to have the extra skater on the ice, there's a very good chance that the puck's going in the opposing net.
47.4%. That's what Edmonton's power play is clicking at this postseason. In second is Winnipeg at 41.7, but they played five games. Boston, 40.7, they played seven games. The Kings played six games, 33.3. So to your point, you can't stop it. And you're going to take a penalty. Vegas is going to take a penalty. So you know that when you take that, 99% of the time, you're going to allow a goal. Deal with it and find some other way to stop that team.
Point something percent
right
of the time.
Right. Right,
we
exactly
want to be specific but about it.
You know what? Probably feels like it. You go off the ice, great. They're going to get a goal. Here we go again. I'm going to be in the whatever and blah, blah, blah. Anytime a team gets three goals, you mentioned, in less than 130, you should end up winning. For the most part, that does happen. Sometimes it doesn't, but whatever. But that's what I find about Vegas. And this even happened in game one when Leon scored all four for the Edmonton Oilers.
And lost.
I found that Vegas just comes back. They always have a counterpunch. And that's what happened with this one. They had three counterpunches. Boom, 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 back to back to back. It was a tight game. It was a good game. Vegas, I think, is in the driver's seat. Again, Edmonton coming home for game six on Sunday. They need that one to force the seventh game. But at the end of it, this series to me is living up to what I thought it would be, and that's one heck of a series.
It is one heck of a series, and we're going to have both Darnell Nurse and Alex Pietrangelo back for the next game after they were both suspended.
Yeah, thoughts on that, by the way.
Oh, the suspension?
Thoughts on that.
Both. Pietrangelo.
So the Nurse thing
not
being rescinded, and then the Pietrangelo.
It was by the book. I mean, I don't see how the NHL could have rescinded it. I don't love it, but the one game suspension, it's by the book. He knew the rules. He broke the rules. You get the instigator in the last 5 minutes. It is what it is. Pietrangelo, who I adore as a hockey player and have for many, many years now, deserved two games. So, and he got one. I knew he would get one. I wanted him to get two. I knew he would not get two because Leon Draisaitl could have broken wrists right now. And that would be absolutely awful.
Yep.
And Alex Pietrangelo didn't slash him on the wrist going, I know I'm not going to break his wrist. I'm just giving him a little love tap here. It wasn't that. He was
he was over
the head and brought it down like an axe into a piece of wood. And it could have been very bad.
People,
I think everybody's lucky that he's not hurt.
Some people said that there should have been no suspension whatsoever. There is an argument that there shouldn't have been any suspension at all. No, none at all. And I just thought, are you kidding me? You're lucky Leon didn't break his hand or his wrist or his finger or anything like that. You take your stick and you little love tap, that's fine. This is above your head. Puck is way gone from Draisaitl. Anyway, you're right. So Pietrangelo was gone. Nurse, I'm with you. Can't rescind the thing. Haig was engaged with somebody else at the time. I know they talked about it before. Hey, whatever, that's fine. But Nurse came in, so you can't rescind it. So
you
they
can't
were
do
both.
That. You can't do that.
No, you can't. You can't. Even strength in this is a real fascinating statistic. I know we talk about Edmonton and the power play. Both teams have 17 goals. It's been that tight, even though sometimes it doesn't feel like it's been that tight. Edmonton has 9 of their 17 with a man advantage, 7 at even strength. Vegas has 13 at even strength. 13 at even strength. So it just goes to show you, if you are able to somehow, even though Vegas can't do it yet, somehow keep Edmonton off the power play, you've got a great chance of winning. But to date, they still haven't done that yet. They're up 3-2.
It was very funny. Well, there's nothing funny about the boarding call, but when Keegan Kolesar went into Ekholm, and I'm watching him like, that's a boarding. That's a major. Yeah. And they got the 5-minute major. The fact that the Oilers only scored one goal during that 5-minute major, and that was considered a victory of sorts by everybody watching the game, because they could have given up four. Right? The Oilers could have scored three or four goals on a 5-minute major the way their power play is humming along, but they kept them to just one and ended up winning the game. That speaks volumes itself, right? So, no, they've got to. If Vegas plays disciplined, they have a very good shot of wrapping this up on, when is it? Sunday. That's right. My days are all over the place. They have a very good chance of wrapping it up on Sunday. Now, here's my question to you, Mr. Ryan Payton. Who starts the net for the Edmonton Oilers?
I know. I knew you were going to say that. I go back to Stuart Skinner.
Why?
And do you want to know the reason why? Not that anybody should make anything of this, but Stuart Skinner, over the course of this series, when he has had a bad game, he's come back with a pretty good outing. And this is what's happened in this series. I'm trying to get this all up here as I'm talking to you. Okay, here we go. So in the first game, he didn't look very good. Next game, he gave up one. Game three, didn't look very good. Next game, gave up one. Game five, suspect. Next game is tomorrow. So if he follows that pattern, I think you still got to go with it. You still have to go with Stuart Skinner. He's gotten you to this point. It's not like tomorrow night's game seven. You don't want it to go game seven. Well, you do if you're Edmonton, but you don't want to go game seven for Vegas. But I think Skinner. I've said it all series, and I'll stick with him.
It is an elimination game. I disagree with you. We don't often disagree. I disagree with you. Jack Campbell came into that game last night and didn't allow a single goal. He didn't surrender a goal. So why are you? And he didn't play 5 minutes. He played over a period, right? He
can't. I get it. Yeah, I get it.
So why would you go with the person who just did not surrender a single goal and kept your team in it? And I'll tell you what, the Oilers ran out of steam to end that game 5-on-5. Yeah. Watching them, they really did. They ran out of gas. If they hadn't, we might be having a different discussion right now about the Oilers coming back, tying it up, and going to overtime. But they didn't. You could tell they just lost it a little bit. Fatigue, who knows? Emotional fatigue. I have no clue, but they weren't playing to win it in the last 10 minutes of that game. It was noticeable. So, and they still only lost by one goal, and credit to Jack Campbell, who was good enough. He didn't do anything incredibly spectacular, but he was good enough. So you go with the guy who did not surrender a goal, but short leash, as you like to put it. And Stuart Skinner's got to be sitting right there, and he has to be hungry to go in and redeem himself because he didn't have a great game.
Right.
He didn't.
Right.
That's how I would play it. So I don't think that's what they do. I think they will go with Skinner. I think they're on Team Payton.
Yep. Because I think we had this discussion last time. Mm-hmm. I think we had this discussion last time, and we've been thinking about it. Would you start Skinner and Campbell? And I think you said Campbell the same thing. You're right. If you go with a guy who didn't give any goals up, then I think that's good mentally. But at the end of it, maybe I'm just too loyal. But hey, how do you like this? Game time on Sunday, 10 mm-hmm. Eastern. You okay with that? No.
I was so excited.
Shall we move on?
The only silver lining to the cloud of the Toronto Maple Leafs being eliminated from the postseason was that there was one game on Sunday scheduled, and I thought, well, wouldn't that be wonderful? I don't need a 4 p.m. start, but 7 p.m., 8 p.m., give me an 8:30 so I can go to bed at a reasonable hour. But they're starting at 10 o'clock, and I just don't understand it. I'll watch it. I'll stay up and be really cranky the next day, but I will watch it. I just wish it was on a little earlier. I'd love to know their reasoning. I would love to know why. If just other things are scheduled, is it a traveling thing? I mean, they've had the day off in between. I would just love to know why.
Put it this way, even people in Edmonton, when the time came out earlier on today, fans in Edmonton were saying, what the heck? And that's local time there. So it's not 10 Eastern time. But even they were saying, come on, really? You got to wait till then. Can we do it 6 local, 5 local, 5:30 local, something? I know. I'm preaching to the converted. And she's lifting up her hands and arms. I know.
All the television revenue they're going to lose from the East Coast, right? Because some people have to go to bed because they have to go to work on Monday morning. That's just life. And if you did have it a couple hours earlier, just you're going to have so many more, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands more eyeballs on that game. I don't understand it. Okay. Anyways, rant over.
There's got to be something. Yeah, rant done. A more reasonable Eastern time zone game tonight is game 6 between Dallas and Seattle, the Kraken. Again, trying to fight to stay alive. They need a win to force the 7th game. And the 7th game, if need be, that would be coming up on a Tuesday. And that would be in Dallas. But Monday, that'll be in Dallas, but not to get too far ahead of ourselves. The last two games in this series, Dallas has outscored the Kraken 11-5. Have the Kraken finally broke?
Well, I don't think broke is the word.
Is there a crack in the team?
Oh, is there a crack? Is that what you're going for? Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll give you that. There is a crack in the team. First, the positive. I was on with your lovely colleague, the ever lovely Mick Kern on Under Review on Wednesday. Yep. And we were discussing this, that everybody on the team has scored, who has played more than one game, has scored besides Jared McCann and Ryan Donato. Now, Jared McCann scored in the last game. So Ryan Donato is literally the only guy who has played regularly in the postseason. I know he's only playing like 9 minutes a game, but Ryan, you got to get it done, buddy. You're going to be the only one. So I am calling a Ryan Donato goal in what will probably be a Stars victory on Saturday evening. They're just, it looks like, first of all, Ottinger has been Ottinger again the last couple. He's looked it. They're just... The Stars are a better team and they've looked the better team. I know that sounds really simple, but I loved the Max Domi game. That's what I'm calling it because that was the one before the last one, I believe, that he just came out and he was the difference maker. And Pavelski looks like Pavelski. He's exactly where he needs to be on the ice at all times. It's actually super annoying for the opposition, I would imagine. Hintz has been a superstar. You just, all the other guys are kicking in and doing what they need to do. And they have won probably, and this is no disrespect to Bobrovsky or to anybody else we've talked about in net so far, but Ottinger is, I think, the best goaltender who's playing right now in terms of like the season-long resume and who you'd want to have start for you if you were in this position. And I do think, the Kraken have cracked. They've run out of gas. That's my thought on it. But you know what? They have surprised me all season. They have surprised me all postseason. So who knows? I'm looking forward to it, though, because it's, again, 7 p.m. Eastern start. Thank you, NHL. So I'll be watching this evening with my steak dinner and out on the deck and enjoying it in such fashion.
A couple things about that last game in Game 5. Seattle outshot Dallas 14-5 in the first, but they were down 2-0. So that's discouraging. Wow. You did whatever you could against Ottinger, and then they lost 5-2. What they're saying is just too many shots from distance, too much from the outside, and that favors Dallas's, or quite frankly, that favors anyone's defensive game if you can keep them on the outside shooting against your goaltender. You mentioned Ottinger, and Brian Ray had him on the show today. He covers the Dallas Stars, and he said this about Ottinger. In his playoff career, in games 1-4, Jake Ottinger has a save percentage of .915 and a goals against of .269. In games 5, 6, and 7, it goes up to .954 and the GAA down to 1.6. So he just seems to be getting in his zone in games 5, and he more than likely will be that way tonight too in game 6. To your point, he's not getting enough credit, but Bobrovsky, dynamite, but Ottinger, fantastic talent.
He's clutch. Yeah. What do you want in the postseason? Yeah. Do you just want solid or do you want clutch? And if you're getting better as the season wears on, that means that you're clutch.
We'll see. Game time tonight. Again, the Dallas Stars a win away from moving on to the Western Conference Final. They take on the Seattle Kraken, and we'll see what happens tomorrow with Vegas and Edmonton. Of course, the winners of that series, those series will end up playing each other in that final. Hart Trophy, there's no discussion, but the three finalists were announced, so we have to talk about the three finalists. Number three or number two, doesn't matter. Matthew Tkachuk of the Panthers, great season. David Pastrnak of the Bruins, great season. But of course, it'll be Connor McDavid.
The bookhouses aren't even taking bets anymore on it. I mean, the odds were ridiculous for ages.
You don't need to.
You would have to like spend you'd have to wager, I should say, $1 million to win like 10 bucks. Like, it was outrageous what the odds were in the first place. They're not even bothering anymore because it is literally there. If there's any slam dunk, this is a slam dunk. There's my, to me, what the only thing you could wager on here, if they wanted to create the bet, is if any voting member doesn't have him number one. That's the only thing.
Whoever,
he's going to win, of course. Mm-mm. But yeah. he or she is going to get called out in that case. Now, who would you have number two? This is Connor McDavid, whatever. But who's the bridesmaid? Is it Pasternak? Because I agree with the three. I think those three are the three who it should be. They are the top three in my mind for this particular trophy, the Hart. Who is number two for you?
I would have, for me, Tkachuk. And the reason is specifically because number two, because it's his first year with a brand new team. Not taking anything away from Pasternak or anything like that. Boston had a great season, but Tkachuk, to me, Pasternak can score with the best of them, right? He's one of the best players in the game. But I just think Tkachuk brings that Tkachukness, if that even made any sense. So I would go with him for number two.
Tkachukiness.
Okay, I like that. I like that. What about you? Would you go? Tkachuk too?
Yeah, it's absolutely Tkachuk. And this is when you have to think about the most valuable aspect of this award. It's not just a very good player award. It's the most valuable player award as well.
Right.
It's the Florida Panthers are not in this position without Matthew Tkachuk. There's no way, no chance. They're not just even towards, and I know it's a regular season award. I'm talking about that. They're not in the postseason without Matthew Tkachuk doing everything he did in those last couple of months, right? Whereas Boston is still going to make the playoffs without David Pastrnak. They are, amazingly. And he's an amazing player, but I still think they do squeeze in because they have the other ones. Yeah. And again, his first year in Florida makes it all the more impressive. And he does everything. He does absolutely everything you want a hockey player to do. So he is my number two.
It's going to be McDavid, and there's only been two unanimous winners, Gretzky in the early 80s, McDavid a couple of years ago as well, unanimous. So pretty much a guarantee it has to be another unanimous win. Okay, final thoughts as we end the pod. We'll get back at it in a few days. We'll obviously know by early next week who the final four are going to be in the NHL. Does Dallas win, or does Seattle force a seventh game tonight?
I want Seattle to force a seventh game. Dallas wins.
Okay. Dallas wins. I'm with you as well. I think Dallas does. I think I have them in six anyway, so that's pretty good. What about tomorrow, Vegas, Edmonton? Do we see game seven next Tuesday, or do we see Vegas move on?
Oilers tie it up, and Vegas eventually wins it in game seven. How do you like that?
Okay. I have Edmonton in seven, so it's got to go seven.
I had Edmonton in seven originally. Okay. I'm changing my mind now just because I've gotten everything wrong up to this point, so who cares? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I have as well. My bracket's busted.
I had Jersey in seven. Yeah. I had the Maple Leafs in six, so just forget about it. Nothing matters anymore. If I don't go 0-4, that'll be something. No. I had the Oilers in seven. I could still get it. I had the Oilers in seven, and I did have Dallas, actually. I had Dallas in six, so I can get that.
Okay. So you're not completely done. No, I'm hanging on by a thread as well. That's the best thing about it, too. You make your picks in the beginning. You do all four rounds. But then after each round, you just forget it. But you just redo the whole slate again, and that's fine. Hey, sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong. That's the whole one of the fun about all this. Anyway, out of time. We'll be back at it in a couple of days. Once again, enjoy the game coming up tonight and also the one tomorrow. The Western Conference finalists still need to be decided. They will be decided in the next few days, and then it'll be a Final Four time in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You follow us on Twitter at Ryan M. Payton, at Victoria Matiash. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts. Also on the SiriusXM app. On behalf of Vic, I'm Ryan. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. We'll talk to you early next week.
This has been Pucks in 7, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.